Colonel Fedmon Kassad arrived with Force Fleet 1, 29 standard weeks later. 30 Omega-class torch ships protecting a single Farcaster-equipped jump ship penetrated the system at high speed. The Singularity Sphere was activated 3 hours after spinning down, and 10 hours after that, there were 400 Force ships of the line in system. The counter-invasion began 21 hours later. Those were the mathematics of the first minutes of the Battle of Brescia. For Kassad, the memory of those days and weeks held not mathematics, but the terrible beauty of combat. It was the first time jump ships had been used on anything above a division level, and there was the expected confusion. Kassad went through from 5 light minutes out, and fell into gravel and yellow dust, because the assault boat Farcaster portal was facing down a steep incline made slick with mud and the blood of the first squads through. Kassad lay in the mud and looked down the hillside at madness. 10 of the 17 Farcaster assault boats were down and burning, scattered across the foothills and plantation fields like broken toys. The containment fields of the surviving boats were shrinking under an onslaught of missile and CPB fire that turned the landing areas into domes of orange flame. Kassad's tactical display was a hopeless mess. His visor showed a garble of impossible fire vectors, blinking red phosphors where force troops lay dying, and overlays of ouster jamming ghosts. Someone was screaming, "Oh, God damn it! God damn it! Oh, God damn it!" on his primary command circuit, and the implants registered a void where command group's data should be. An enlisted man helped him up. Kassad flicked mud off his command wand and got out of the way of the next squad farcasting through. And the war was on. From his first minutes on South Brescia, Kassad realized that the new Bushido was dead. 80,000 superbly armed and trained force ground troops advanced from their staging areas, seeking battle in an unpopulated place. Ouster Force retreated behind a line of scorched earth, leaving only booby traps and dead civilians. Force used Farcasters to outmaneuver the enemy, to force him to fight. The Ousters responded with a barrage of nuclear and plasma weapons, pinning the ground troops under force fields, while the Ouster infantry retreated to prepare defenses around cities and dropship staging areas. There were no quick victories in space to shift the balance on South Brescia. Despite feints and occasional fierce battles, the Ousters retained complete control of everything within 3 AU of Brescia. Force space units fell back and concentrated on keeping the fleet within Farcaster range and protecting the primary jump ship. What had been forecast as a 2-day battle ground on for 30 days, then 60. Warfare had been thrown back to the 20th or 21st century. Long, grim campaigns fought through the brick dust of ruined cities, over the corpses of civilians. The 80,000 original force troops were ground up, reinforced with 100,000 more, and were still being decimated when the call went out for 200,000 more. Only the grim resolve of Mena Gladstone and a dozen other determined senators kept the war alive, and the troops dying, while the billions of voices of the All Thing and the AI Advisory Council called for disengagement. Kassad had understood the change of tactics almost at once. His street-fighting instincts had risen to the forefront, even before most of his division was wiped out in the Battle of the Stone Heap. While other force commanders were all but ceasing to function, frozen into indecision by this violation of the new Bushido, Kassad, in command of his regiment and in temporary command of his division after the nuking of Command Group Delta, was trading men for time and calling for the release of fusion weapons to spearhead his own counterattack. By the time the Ousters withdrew, 97 days after the force rescue of Brescia, Kassad had earned the double-edged nickname of the Butcher of South Brescia. It was rumored that even his own troops were afraid of him. And Kassad dreamed of her with dreams that were more and less than dreams. On the last night of the battle for Stoneheap, in the maze of dark tunnels where Kassad and his hunter-killer groups used sonics and T-5 gas to flush out the last warrens of ouster commandos, the colonel fell asleep amid the flame and screams, and felt the touch of her long fingers on his cheek, and the soft compression of her breasts against him. When they entered New Vienna on the morning after the space strike Kassad had called in, the troops following the glass-smooth, 20-meter-wide burn grooves into the lanced city, Kassad had stared without blinking at the rows of human heads lying on the pavement, carefully lined up as if to welcome the rescuing force troops with their accusatory stares. Kassad had returned to his command EMV, closed the hatches, and, curling up in the warm darkness smelling of rubber, heated plastics, charged ions, had heard her whispers over the babble of the C3 channels and implant coating. On the night before the ouster retreat, Kassad left the command conference on the HS Brazil, farcast to his HQ in the Indelibles north of the Hein Valley, and took his command car to the summit to watch the final bombardment. The nearest of the tactical nuclear strikes was 45 kilometers away. The plasma bombs blossomed like orange and blood-red flowers planted in a perfect grid. Kassad counted more than 200 dancing columns of green light as the hell-whip lances ripped the broad plateau to shreds. And even before he slept, while he sat on the flare skirt of the EMV and shook pale after-images from his eyes, she came. She wore a pale blue dress and walked lightly between the dead burr-root plants on the hillside. The breeze lifted the hem of the soft fabric of her dress. Her face and arms were pale, almost translucent. She called his name. He could almost hear the words. And then, the second wave of bombardment rolled in across the plain below him, and everything was lost in noise and flame.